Welcome. It's International Happiness Day. Isn't that cool? There's an International Happiness Day created by the United Nations proclaiming the pursuit of happiness as a fundamental human goal. Boy, I think that needs to set in for just a second, huh? Pursuit of happiness as a fundamental human goal. That social, economic, and environmental well-being are indivisible, and together they define gross global happiness. I'm certainly proud to be part of this huge movement of energy. I'm Joanna Brandy, known for so many years as the Customer Care Lady and the Customer Care Goddess. I'm the publisher of The Customer Care Coach, a robust self-study leadership program for people whose responsibility it is to create a fabulous, amazing, remarkable customer experience. I've spent almost 25 years working and studying in organizations of all kinds to help them increase their customer and employee happiness. And I can tell you one thing of which I am certain. The happier the organization is internally, the happier the customers, suppliers, and communities externally. And I'm here today with my colleague, friend, and coach, Carolyn Watt. Carolyn and I met a number of years ago at a customer experience conference and discovered that we were doing similar things in the U.S. where I was and in Canada where she was. We liked each other a lot, and so we've been collaborating on a variety of projects throughout the years. Carolyn?
Hi, Joanna. Yes, my name's Carolyn, and my company is called the Customer Experience Company. And along with Joanna, I have long known the benefits of a happy workplace. When you treat your staff with kindness and respect, they in turn will do the same when they interact with your customers. You know, it's a theory of reciprocity, really. Happiness is definitely contagious, and there's a direct impact to the bottom line. No question about that. You know, the fact that the United Nations has proclaimed March 20th as Happiness Day is wonderful to bring awareness to it. If you stop people on the street and you ask them what they want in their life, most people say they want to be happy. When you ask about their children, you get the same response. I just want them to be happy in whatever they do. Yet happiness seems elusive for so many, doesn't it, Joanna?
Absolutely, and I think that's because we keep being reminded when we turn the television on of all the things we don't have.
Mm-hmm.
So there's almost, in some way, seems to be this movement towards making us desire something that we don't have so we'll be dissatisfied with what we have.
That's
a prescription for danger.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people are always asking me, how did I become a happiness coach and how did I get interested in this? So it's important, I think, to at least explain the story just a little bit. 9 years ago, I got a phone call that would change my life, and I became one of Dr. Martin Seligman's 850 authentic happiness coaches. He is known as the father of positive psychology. And this awakened in me this passion for this study and the discovery of applied positive psychology and neuroscience. And that continues and gets stronger with each new piece of evidence that comes out that positive emotions are good for us. They make us smarter because of how they interact, the biochemicals in our body and how it interacts in the brain. They make us healthier by building our immune systems. They make us more socially adept. And they even make us wealthier. There's a fair amount of evidence coming around now that says, you know, when you spend more time in positive emotion, people like being around you. Your network is broader. People are willing to help you when you need help. You get the support you need. So it actually, in the end, makes us a little wealthier when we have that kind of support. And let's face it, positive emotions just make life that much more pleasant. You know, given a choice of doing business with someone who loves, likes, or at least enjoys coming to work because their emotional and spiritual needs as well as their physical needs are met, they radiate joy, happiness, contentment, self-confidence. I love that feeling. Pride to work there, competence. They know what they're talking about, and presence. Given a choice of that kind of a person or the kind of person who works at a company that doesn't meet their needs, which leaves them, you know, feeling disenfranchised, disconnected, and disengaged, well, those people are radiating out something more like dissatisfaction or anger or bitterness or arrogance or, you know, any one of those several prickly negative emotions that we just sort of pick up. We don't really know what it's about, but we pick them up. Now, when you have a choice of those two different kinds of people, I mean, who do you want to give your hard-earned money to? The one that's radiating joy or the one that's radiating discontent?
Exactly, exactly. You know, it also reminds me of that old expression that says you catch more flies with honey than vinegar, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about being in a happy state. But, you know, you just mentioned spiritual needs. How does that actually fit into the workplace, Joanna?
Well, it fits in a very motivating, a very foundational, and very important way. And it's a great question. I think spirit at work is often so misunderstood, but let's think about how we feel when we're part of a great team. What do we call it? We call it team spirit. Spirit, when we talk about spirit at work, what we're really just talking about is connection, you know, this sense of belonging, this connection to something, a compelling vision, a motivating mission, or even better, a cause, the reason we really come to work every day, or all of those combined, which is really fabulous. You know, it's a connection to something larger than ourselves. It takes us outside ourselves. It gives us a sense of significance, purpose, a sense of meaning for what we do. And that when I talk about spirit, that's really what I mean. And I know that too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think the thing that motivates people, you know, to go that extra mile, you know, for that kind of behavior, it's that magic that we look for in the customer experience and in the work that we do. And how does a company inspire discretionary effort in employees? What's the difference in the employee who brings a high amount of energy and attention to the role and one who, you know, just brings minimum energy, just enough to kind of get by without experiencing any penalties? You know, of course we can't discount for individual differences. And in the end, each of us really is responsible for our own experience in work and in life. And a lot of what motivates people to do more and give more is the culture of the workplace.
I know. It's so important. And it's almost as if I can't get that idea out there enough because, you know, culture appears to be invisible. So people don't want to work on it because they can't quite figure out how. And that's really important. The culture is really important. And there'll be more phone calls where we have the opportunity to talk about the culture. But today is a special day because it's International Day of Happiness. And, you know, both of those things have to be present, the happiness of the human being and the willingness on the part of the business to create a culture in which people can succeed and thrive. But today we're really going to focus on the individual, on personal happiness. The desire and attention that an individual can bring to create a happier, more fulfilling life, whether at work or outside work. So we're calling this program Happiness 101, what science can tell you about seeing the glass as half full. So it's about your personal happiness, and today we've got 9 key concepts. So listen carefully. The suggestions we present are very simple, yet they have very profound effects. Emotions are contagious, and each one of us broadcasts our emotions out through our energy field. And I think the world would be a pretty awesome place if more people were projecting positive, mind-expanding, and even a loving vibe. And what we know from science is that when we are in the experience of a positive emotion, the mind does expand. It's called the broadened and build response. And what it says is that when we are experiencing a positive emotion, our vision, our peripheral vision, and our ability to see a picture from a more holistic perspective opens up because the right hemisphere of our brain and the left hemisphere of our brain begin communicating better. So we actually do expand our mind and expand our world when we are in a positive emotion. So I think it's important that we all know how to increase our own positive capacity, our ability to experience and share emotions that are known and scientifically, this is what's so cool about this, it's scientifically proven to increase our health and our well-being, and so importantly, the health and well-being of those with whom we interact. And that's really important. I mean, imagine what the world would be like if everyone was experiencing a more positive vibration.
Oh, well, I think that sounds like a good homework for everybody listening today, don't you? But let's get to our list of 9 things. Now, we know that what you focus on, your attention on expands. So let's put our attention on what we came here to do today, to share a perspective on health, on wellness, well-being inside and outside work. And, you know, there's no single, easier, cheaper, better way to become healthier, more creative, more productive, more attractive, more open to possibility than to expand your capacity for the experience of positive emotion number 1. There you go, Joanna.
Okay, well, I'd say the first thing is let's expand our emotional vocabulary. How do you feel? I'm good. I'm not so bad. I have no complaints. Listen to what people say when we ask them that question. There is a wide range of positive emotions, and I actually think it's very important to understand that, because some people, even though we don't want to believe it, I think that some people actually do have a little bias against the word happiness. They keep equating it with that little yellow smiley ball. And so for the people that are uncomfortable with the word happiness, so many more positive emotions to experience: amusement, awe, hope, inspiration, interest, joy, love, passion, pleasure. When we're in a beautiful open state of curiosity, you know, when we're feeling that sense of elevation, when we belong to a great team, excitement, of course, gratitude. So there are many, many positive emotions. So expand that vocabulary. It's really important for us to understand how important it is to be able to take more of those micro moments of positivity into our day every day. And I think once we begin to accept, and that's the first step, that happiness is within our reach, then the rest actually is relatively easy. Because creating new habits, positive new habits, is a self-reinforcing activity. So we do it, and it feels good. So it's kind of easy to go back and do it again, because then we do it, and it feels good. Emotions are, I think, more than we think. They're not things. They're actually systems that simultaneously alter our patterns of thinking, our behavior, our experience, our verbal and nonverbal, very important, nonverbal communications, and our bodily functions. So when we change an emotion, we're changing an entire system. The second concept we want to talk about today is outsmarting your happiness set point. A lot of you out there might not know what a happiness set point is, but we understand now that 50%, that's one half of our ability to experience positive emotion and happiness, is actually genetic in nature. If you've got more than one kid, you may have noticed that one bounced out smiling and the other one was kind of dissatisfied with everything as they spit the peas right back into your face. You know, there is a genetic component to happiness, and it accounts for about half of our ability to be happy. Now that leaves another half. 10% of that other half, I like to see it as a pie, and I'm sort of slicing the pie in half. 10% of the other half of the pie is based on the circumstances that you find yourself in, where you live, where you work, your health, the people you hang out with, whether or not you're married, whether or not you've got good weather, all of those kinds of things which we would call life circumstances. Some are changeable, some are not. The ones that the scientists have found have the most weight as to whether or not you're happy is whether or not you have faith in something that's outside yourself. It doesn't have to be God, but it has to be something that's bigger than you, some kind of meaning, because when people have meaning, they are happier. Whether or not people have a large social circle and people they can rely on to be with, because when you're with another human being and you're having a good time, especially your body begins pumping out some very, very beneficial hormones that keep you healthier. And the third thing is whether or not you're married, because it does show that married people tend to be happier than single people. But we don't really know whether happy people get married more often or marriage makes you happy. So I'll just leave that one up in the air. So
I think we best, because there are a lot of people who might not agree with that one.
I know. I think we're going to leave that right where it is. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about when we look, you know, many of us look for happiness outside. We call it happiness when, you know. I'll be happy when I get a new car, and I'll be happy when I get a new apartment. I'll be happy when I get that promotion. I'll be happy when I get that new boyfriend. The ironic thing about that kind of happiness, when we go searching for it outside ourselves, especially with things that we want to acquire, is that the human body is adaptive. We have this amazing ability. That's why our temperature is, you know, around 98.6, even after it goes up or goes down. That's the normal homeostasis of the body. Well, we do the same thing with happiness. If we look for our happiness outside ourselves, you know, we buy that new car, it feels great. It feels great for about as long as the new car smells new. And then we adapt to it. Within 2 to 3 months, we tend to adapt to those kind of changes, and then it no longer has the power, especially when organizations talk to me about money as a motivator. Money is very motivating for a very short period of time, unless it's a huge amount of money. It'll motivate you for a while until you don't notice that you have it anymore. So we're adaptive. So that leaves 40%, and that's a really important 40%. You know, in the 40% of your happiness is within your voluntary control. It's in the thoughts, actions, habits, attitudes that go on every day. And 90% of all your behavior is habitual. So it's the things you do every day. It's the things that get repeated over and over again. And you can change those things. It's voluntary. And those things are intentional. So in our workshops, it's so much fun to do this exercise because we put voluntary up on the top of the flip chart. And then we ask people to list what are the things that you can do voluntarily, the kinds of things, attitudes, actions, habits, the kinds of thoughts you think, et cetera, what are the things that you can do voluntarily that will increase your amount of positive emotion and happiness. And then we make a long list. What are some of the things that you do voluntarily, Carolyn, that increase your ratio of positive emotions?
Well, first of all, I try to stay around positive friends because I don't want to be around gloomy doomies, you know, negative Nellies, because that tends to bring me down. So I choose who I'm around with, who I spend my time with. Reading inspirational material. Actually looking at what I eat so I don't end up with sugar spikes during the day. You know, do things I like to do. I'm a Scottish country dancer, so I love doing that, and a ballroom dancer, so I do those things because they make me happy.
And music is so important, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, it calms you, it excites you, it gives you pleasure. It's whatever kind of music does that to you. It's cool. It's very cool.
So that's something that our listeners can do when they have a few moments. Take a real good look at all those things that are in their voluntary control. One thing I always like to make sure that's on that list is exercise, because it is proven that exercise is more potent than antidepressant drugs in keeping you in a calm, happy state. So making sure you get that, you know, three times a week, at least 30 minutes each time that you do it, 3 by 30, it's not that much. Just get that exercise done so your body begins pumping out those biochemicals, the chemistry of calm, you know, the endorphins and the serotonin, which helps you sleep and all that good stuff that builds your immune system. It's profound, and that is voluntary.
Absolutely. And, you know, I suppose, you know, it's whatever type of exercise you want to do. As I say, I like to do dancing. So it's as long as you do something that you like to do, you know, instead of sitting in front of a computer all day.
Mm-hmm. Like we do?
Yeah, at times.
I have to tell you, I had the music on this morning. Somebody gave me this most amazing, you know, real inspirational music, and I started my day with it, and I have to tell you, I've memorized a few of the words to the songs, and I have to tell you, it was a joyous, expansive morning because I was, you know, expanding my lungs, knowing I was going to be talking. It was great. But we need to move on to PERMA.
Yep.
So.
I love that. PERMA. Pleasure.
PERMA.
Engagement. Relationship. Meaning and accomplishment. And we need all parts of them, all five pieces.
Yeah, it's a really interesting story I didn't come up with it, how positive psychologists came up with PERMA. Dr. Martin Seligman, who taught authentic happiness and wrote authentic happiness after years of teaching it, really did decide he didn't like the word very much and realized that what he was really talking about was well-being, not just happiness, but well-being. He taught us that there were three faces to happiness: pleasure, engagement, and meaning. But as time went on and he drew people into his very, very successful and now very famous master's programs on positive psychology, they challenged him. And they said, Marty, there's more. Mm-hmm. And the more was evolved this acronym PERMA, because the two things that Marty had left off were relationship and accomplishment. So when we look at authentic happiness and when we look at, you know, this rich well-being, this thriving, flourishing state we'd all love to be in, we can find that with any combination of these five things. I mean, the P stands for pleasure, and we all love pleasure. You know, if we drink a glass of wine slowly and eat a chocolate slowly, we'll get pleasure out of every bite. But if we drink four glasses of wine and then eat too many chocolates, it's no longer a pleasurable experience.
That's
so
for sure.
Pleasure itself isn't enough to make us truly happy. It adds a wonderful element to life. And when I first started studying happiness, this is the area where I didn't have enough of when we measured it. So it was a very interesting period of time for me, because a lot of my homework assignments were, you know, go out and find more pleasure. And we do that by savoring things. So if you want to get more pleasure in your life, then you want to learn to savor things a little bit more. If we do want that enduring happiness and well-being, we also need to be engaged in using our strengths and in showing up and being able to be our best selves. And when we do positive leadership coaching, when we talk about positive leadership, that's huge, is how can we create an environment where people can bring their best self to work, because that's where we get those positive emotions of confidence and competence, and that's where we feel, you know, really good about being where we are. And that's sublime. And when you get to that sublime state of engagement where your strengths and your challenges meet, that usually happens to me when I am out performing in front of people and sometimes when I'm writing, we find ourselves in that state of flow. So we've got this challenge, and the best part of us rises up to meet that challenge. And we forget to eat lunch. We forget what time it is. We get, you know, right there. And that's a tremendously beneficial state from the body. And we can get that from sports or cooking or gardening or dancing.
Absolutely. In the flow, in the zone, whatever you want to call it. You've just
exactly
lost
right.
in it. Yeah.
Exactly
yeah.
right. Exactly right. You're lost in it. And that's such a refreshing state for the brain, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, and that's why you come back when you do something like that, you come back and you have a little bit more energy. So any activity that engages you or involves you or challenges you to lose yourself in it. So take a look for our listeners out there, take a look at your life and, you know, in what areas are you engaged? If you're not getting enough engagement at work, then go get a hobby. If you're not engaged in anything at all, then go talk to other people who appear to be engaged in things and ask them how they delve in and how they become present with what they're doing. And then, of course, relationships. I think it's really important to take a look. We don't have time today. My email series, The Customer Care Tip, and we're doing a 5-part mini-series right now on relationships. So anyone who wants to get in on that mini-series on trust and respect and all those really important parts of relationships, hop on over to returnonhappiness.com and make sure you get on the subscriber list to be part of that. But
now,
the relationship...
Let me give you a little plug there, Joanna, to everybody listening, to please do that, because there's such fantastic information on her website. Absolutely.
Oh, thank you. It's nice to have you plug me, Carolyn. And then we look at meaning. We talked about that earlier. We talked about team spirit. We have to have meaning. We have to be connected to something else, connecting to something bigger, larger, and something outside of ourselves. That could be at work, that could be with a charity, that could be at our kids' school, that could be with our family in the role of a caretaker. So very, very important to have that sense of meaning, and then, of course, the sense of accomplishment. So we want to take a look at how we can get a little bit more of each one of those, and maybe we'll do a call on each one of those and be able to explore each one just a little bit more. I also think, this is my personal bias, I think we all ought to vow to become optimists, because optimists live longer than pessimists.
Absolutely. 7 to 9 years, in fact, because they're living with hope, faith, as we mentioned earlier, and with joy. You know, they're usually more creative, they're healthier. And
they sell better.
They sell better. And you know what? They're just open to possibility. And because they are, they attract more, you know. They believe in themselves. In fact, the whole field of optimism allows us to believe in ourselves and in the future.
You know? I think without it, you can't believe in yourself. It's kind of one of those things where you've got them hooked together.
Yes.
You know, what's interesting about optimism, my first exposure to Marty Seligman, Dr. Martin Seligman, was through the book Learned Optimism. And I read it thinking I was an optimist. When I finished reading, I knew I was not. So what he explained was that optimism is an explanatory style. It's got to do with the way we explain the world to ourselves. So if we have a filter that says, you know, oh, woe is me, this negative thing always happens to me, this negative, oh, wherever I go, there's a cloud over my head, that's going to continue to happen to you. When you look at a negative event, you take it personally, add some drama to it, make it pervasive and more permanent. I hear that all the time down here in Florida. It always rains on my vacation.
Oh,
you know, yeah, it's interesting. But anyway, that's a filter. An optimist, and this is why it can be learned, an optimist, when faced with a negative event, explains it as something that's temporary and specific. Oh, it's Tuesday. Look, it's raining. Okay, go to the museum. You know, so they have a whole different attitude towards things. A Learned Optimism, a wonderful book, wonderful book to read. I like to say that I am a realistic optimist, because I was. I'm a reformed pessimist. I'm now a realistic optimist. And realistic optimism is our ability to maintain a positive attitude without denying reality, but where we actively appreciate the positive aspects of the situation without ignoring the negative. So we're appropriately responding to the negative. We're not ignoring it, but we're not getting attached to it. We're not reacting to it. We're responding from a place that says, it's not worth my get stressed out about that. Let me handle it over here. So I like to think of myself as a realistic optimist.
Well, I kind of like that explanation. That's cool. Reformed negative is that's funny. But it's true, though, isn't it?
You've never heard me say that before?
Yeah,
I'm a reformed
I think I have heard you say that. But, you know, I guess this all comes down to the fact that, and this is our number five, that happiness is actually a choice. It's something that you decide to do in your way of looking at the world. It's a skill, and really it's inside of everybody. It's your own responsibility. It's not your boss's. It's not your mom. It's not your husband. You know, it's your choice. It belongs to you. And really, it's a moment by moment thing. You know, you choose how you are in every moment.
And that requires awareness. That's where we started. You know, is that when we have this awareness of happiness, that we have more control over it than we ever thought we had, because it is a moment decision. Shall I see this as a good thing, or shall I see this as a bad thing? Or even better, shall I see this as a neutral thing and not assign meaning to everything that comes at us? Mm-hmm. And be able to just be with what is. Happiness right. becomes a very, very expansive way of being, and it's influenced by our biology, our neurology, our psychology, our theology, our culture. And you know, it's funny, even our superstitions. Mm-hmm. I come from an Italian background. Had a woman, you remember, I had Amy worked with me.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
And Amy comes from a Jewish background. And, you know, I found there were so many similarities in the kinds of things we were talking about. Something one day, and she said, watch out, you'll put the Kandahara on it. You know, and that's the Jewish way of saying, you know, you'll curse it if you say that about it. And of course, an Italian's version of that is be careful. You'll you know, activate the malocchias, the evil eye.
mm-hmm.
You know, when you think about it, you know, you're on the highway, you're in the car. I say to you, oh, look, there's no traffic tonight. You know, what's the first thing you say?
Knock on wood.
Knock on wood.
Yeah.
Knock on wood. Shh, don't say it. You know, it's almost as if when we express happiness, it's going to go to the ears of God, and a lightning strike is going to come down and curse us and make the happiness go away. And I think some of that is embedded, and I think we need to let go of that, because knocking on wood and in certain cultures, including the one I grew up in, you have to be careful of speaking about happiness. It was really, you know, my mom, as successful a professional woman she was, she still carried with her some of the deep-seated beliefs that you shouldn't talk about things if you're happy. You know, it's a superstition. So there's so much that determines our happiness. We have to start noticing what we notice. We have to start
Absolutely.
Noticing what we notice. And number six is we got to get our brains on our side. I mean, I'm going to make the basics really, really short, and I would love to talk about more on another day, but the basics are this. Our neurological systems are hardwired for fear. You know, so after millions and millions of years of living with minimal shelter and hostile environments, we have neurology that is wired in such a way that we're always scanning for what's wrong in the environment. So if we want something different, we need to change that. We need to become intensely aware of how we are seeing things, noticing what we're noticing, noticing where we're putting our energy, noticing our language, and seeing where we are perhaps 50 times a day tripping off that primal fight or flight response. And that, by the way, is the estimate of how many times we go into the stress response in today's crazy environment where we're being interrupted by everything, where the news is full of crisis, where we're you know, there's the little, your amygdala is going, danger, 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 even at things that have no inherent danger. So we have to be very, very careful, because that kicks off a stress response that shuts down the neocortex, the executive function of the brain where your creativity is, and puts us back into the lower parts of the brain, the primal brain, the mammalian brain, the brain that we share with animals, to get us out of the situation alive. So we have to become friends with our brain. We really have to understand how the brain works, That's a subject for another call.
Mm-hmm.
But suffice to say that neurons that wire together wire together. So when you're if your neurons are firing together, they are forming a neural pathway in your brain. So if in response to someone saying something to you, you respond by only looking at the negative, you're building a neural pathway for the negative. If in response to something that happens, you are able to see the good and talk about the good and name the good and build on the good, you're building a neural pathway on the other side of the brain that is helping you be happier because neurons that fire together, wire together.
Oh, I like that. Fire together, wire together. That makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
It does.
So we have, what, a couple of more?
Yeah, I guess. So number seven. And I like this one because my last name is Watt, so I always tell everybody like the light bulb. So number seven is shine the light on what is right. You get what you focus on, and what you focus on expands. We said that at the beginning here.
Yeah.
That it's all about reframing situations in a more positive way and asking the question about what's the good in this?
Yeah. What's the good in this? What's going well and why is one of my favorites. Or saying to somebody, what's the good news? You know, there are so many ways that we can frame it so we get a more positive answer. I like doing an appreciation audit. And if you need to build your positivity muscle, this is a great way to do it. You know, put a timer on your smartphone and maybe three times a day, spend 3 to 5 minutes thinking about and perhaps writing down things that you appreciate, that you're grateful for. You know, you can do this in your commute. You can, if you're not writing it down, you can do it in your shower. You can do it, you know, while you're eating your breakfast. But it's really important that we, because as we begin focusing on those positive things, we're building new neural pathways, so we're training our brains to be happier. Keep a blessings book or a gratitude book beside your bed at night. I'm still using mine. It's 9 years later, and I'm into lots of books, and I don't at this point do it every single night, but I will tell you I'm still doing it anywhere between 4 and 5 times a week, writing down three good things that happened to me today and why they happened, or I expand on it. Because there's evidence with well over 1.5 million people that if you do that little three good things and why exercise at the end of the day, within 2 weeks you're going to feel happier. Because it's building that new pathway in your brain.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. You know, and actually, Joanna, if you remember, you sent me a gratitude journal.
I know. It's my favorite thing to do.
It's an absolutely perfect thing to do. And you don't have to do it every night. I think that's – people think, oh, no, now I've got to fill this out. No, just when the mood strikes you, write something down.
You know what? And that's exactly it. And I keep one on my phone. You know, you keep it on your phone. There's a lot of apps now. It's very cool. Somebody just sent me one the other day, a note about – there's a lot of – I call them happy apps that you can get on your smartphone and keep track of all the good things that are happening in your life, which is wonderful. When I'm working in organizations and I've got folks that are having a hard time with colleagues, one of the first thing I do is ask them to do what I call a positive aspects exercise. And we sit down together and we do our very best to write down all the positive things about that person. And what's so interesting is once we have labeled someone as negative or bad or difficult or arrogant or condensating or whatever, just trying to pull up some of the words I hear over and over again when someone's describing someone else, condescending, that's the word I was looking for.
There you go. Yeah,
I know, sometimes my brain just goes way ahead of my mouth. I think that what we do is when we label someone, we form a filter. And then every time we look at them, we reinforce that filter because we see what we're looking for. And so that's why it's so difficult when I sit folks down. Sometimes they can't even think of three good things that person does, you know, like showing up for work in the morning. So that's an important thing to be able to do, is to know that there, for every negative side, there's a positive side, and to train yourself, it's a mind-training activity, train yourself to look at the positive aspects. We believe in the field of positive psychology that you need a minimum positivity to negativity ratio of 3-1. That's kind of the tipping point, 3 times more positivity than negativity. But for high performance, and for, according to Dr. John Gottman and his wife, for happy marriages, we need a positivity to negativity ratio of 5-1. So when we want to take a look at it, and we really do, you can count it. You can just count it. That's what these apps are about, helping people count the number of times they've done something or think something or feel something positive to build that positivity ratio. And I think number eight, don't believe everything you think, because we make up stories about things all the time, and we're really good at it. You know, we disasterize, we catastrophize, we awfulize. Oh, my God, that's so awful. And if you look at the facts, very often the thing that we're talking about is neither awful nor a disaster nor a catastrophe, but we're, you know, so steeped in the drama of things. We're thinking 60,000 thoughts a day. 95% of them are the same thoughts that we thought yesterday, and according to communication specialists, 80% of those are negative. So negative thoughts and words are going to weaken us and weaken that vibration. Positive thoughts and words and actions, of course, are going to strengthen us. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to be real careful. Dr. Daniel Amen, which we often see him on public television, he talks about watching your ants, automatic negative thoughts. That's probably been there since your childhood. And a lot of our aunts sound like, you know, I'm not good enough, I'm too stupid, they won't like me, you know, my thighs are too fat, why does it always go wrong, what else could go wrong? Mm-hmm. Those are automatic negative thoughts that were programmed into us by someone else a long time ago. We have to start paying attention so that we can turn those around. And then breathlessly, I know we're trying to keep this short, but there's so much to say. I really think that we all need to develop our own happiness practice. The little gift book I wrote, 54 Ways to Stay Positive in a Changing, Challenging, and Sometimes Negative World, which you can find at either returnonhappiness.com or positivitypractices.com, that book began as my writing down the things that I did to stay more positive. And it was precipitated by someone in a seminar that stood up and said, Joanna, what do you do to stay positive? And so I started writing things down. You can develop your own happiness pattern practice. You can do the gratitude book. You can do an appreciation journal. You can end a meeting with a circle of appreciation. You can count your blessings. You can spend a lot of time in nature because that gives us loads and loads and loads of positive the body responds well to positive. It's a stress-reducing thing. One thing that we need to know about positive emotions is that when you're experiencing a positive emotion, it actually undoes the effect of stress. So as an antidote to stress, we want to be more positive. Meditation works really, really well. What are some of your favorite happiness practices or positivity practices? I use them sort of interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. I think if we kind of look back on the list that we've just given to everybody, and it's all about thinking about the words that you use and being aware, being very aware of what you're doing and acknowledging it, because we take so many things for granted and we don't recognize that those are actually happy moments.
And you know what? When you sit in a happy moment, for more than, it depends on who you read, 17 to 23 seconds, let me go there. I'll say 23 seconds. When you can sit in a happy moment, this moment of enjoyment, as one of my teachers, Barbara Fredrickson, says, a moment of positivity resonance, when we are resonating with each other, when you can sit in that place for 23 seconds or more, it changes the biochemistry, and your body begins flooded with all the good stuff, with the chemicals of calm, which are the chemicals that turn on the healing systems in the body. So there's such a connection between our experience of positive emotion and good health and being able to heal ourselves that I think everyone truly should take the responsibility of saying, how can I make my life a little happier? How can I experience more positive emotions? Because once anyone does, everyone around them will too, because emotions, this is where we started with, emotions are contagious. So I think we're, you know, coming to the end of our time here. We'll do it again. It's been so much fun. Lots of positivity resonance, Carolyn. I love
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
I love it.
And I think as a close, you know, we can talk about the fact that when you give somebody a hug, it's usually like 3 seconds. But if you give them a 20-second hug, it's therapeutic.
Same thing. It's amazing, isn't it? And it starts the flow of oxytocin in the body, and there's so many benefits to oxytocin. I've had so much fun checking out the chemicals for, you know, I just you know, it's like being back in chemistry class with all that I have been learning about how these physiological responses, even taking your own right hand, putting it over your heart. Let's do that now. Take your right hand, put it over your heart. Let's just take a little bit of a breath before we leave each other. And think of something that you appreciate. Well, you know what? Let's do a mini circle of appreciation. There's only two of us in the circle, Carolyn.
All right.
Carolyn, I really appreciate what we've done here today because working with you today has increased my positivity ratio for the day.
Oh, well. Fabulous. Fabulous. Well, it's the same, too. Same for me, because and sharing with everyone on some simple techniques on what they can do to be more aware. And I think the more we spread that message, the better. So I'm very happy to have been able to do that with you.
Thank you. And speak of spreading the message, I lost my breath there when you said that. Yeah, if our dear listeners would be happy to spread this message, we're posting it on positivitypractices.com. It will most likely show up somewhere on returnonhappiness.com, probably along with our email tips. Mm-hmm. And I believe if I can figure out how to do it, it will post on Facebook as well at the Joanna Brandy and Company Facebook page. And if you pick it up over there, if you've picked it up over there, please hit the like button and spread the word. Caring is contagious. We have to get out there and spread the word.
Absolutely.
So thank you, Carolyn, and thank you to all our listeners for their time and most especially for their attention. And I'm gonna talk about the future here, for their intention to go out and spread more positive emotions and more positive vibes in this wonderful world we live in. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Perfect.